Fluoridation first began?
No, no, I don't yet.
1946. 1946, Mandrake. Does that coincide with your post-war commie conspiracy?
It's incredibly obvious. A foreign substance is introduced into our precious bodily fluids without the knowledge of the individual, certainly without any choice. That's the way a hardcore commie works.
If you go back to the end of World War II, and now that the people that ran our country had defeated, you know, some of the other competing tyrannies, they wanted a way to lower fertility, dumb people down, give them higher cancer rates, and more docile. And they began to add the waste from aluminum production and nuclear weapons, uranium purification, and from phosphate mining for fertilizer. And they would then take the raw mix of that toxic waste that was incredibly expensive to store, and they would dump it into the water supply. By 1960, around 60% of the country had it. And today, over 70% of the United States has fluoridation of water.
They knew in the 20s that sodium fluoride was a deadly chemical weapon that had a calmative effect that fractured the bones, the teeth, that attacked every organ in the body, particularly glands, calcified them. Thousands of studies by the 50s. They took the toxic waste, but used the term fluoride as a whole subgroup of over 100 deadly chemicals.
Lead, mercury, arsenic.
Just on and on and on that they dump in your water.
The fight to warn the unsuspecting populace of the dangers of dumping industrialized hydrofluorosilicic acid into the public drinking water system in order to release fluoride ions to meet the CDC recommendations to a level of 0.7 to 1.2 milligrams per liter in order to help prevent tooth decay has been an ongoing battle for over a decade.
The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, otherwise known as OSHA, is a U.S. agency that requires companies to produce a Material Safety Data Sheet, or an MSDS, for every chemical product in the market. The MSDS that Mosaic produces for their fluoride product will make your hair stand on end.
So what we find in the case of the Mosaic, their hydrofluorosilicic acid, is that it is not a pharmaceutical-grade product. It is an industrial grade chemical, and under Section 2 hazard identification, it identifies a health hazard as being corrosive to the skin, the eyes, and the mucous membranes. If you come in contact with it through the skin or inhalation or ingestion, such as swallowing it, it may cause severe irritation and burns.
Our studies involve comparing the deaths of all persons in the 10 largest fluoridated cities of the United States with the 10 largest non-fluoridated cities in the United States year by year, which you can see here perhaps. Here is the fluoridated, and here is the non-fluoridated set of 10 cities each.
So AP reports, New York AP, the U.S. government report expected to stir debate concluded that fluoride in drinking water at twice the recommended limit is linked to lower IQs in children. It's also cancer, everything else I just mentioned. And they said with moderate confidence they know this. So they're getting out ahead of it because they're talking about all the chemicals in the water. They put the poison in the water. And they know exactly what they're doing. The report, based on analysis of previously published research, marks the first time the federal agency has determined with moderate confidence that there is a link between higher levels of fluoride exposure and lower IQs in kids. While the report was not designed to evaluate the health effects of fluoride in drinking water alone, it is a striking acknowledgement of a potential neurological risk from high levels of fluoride.
Lester Holt, chief propagandist at NBC News, attempted to keep the dying pro-fluoride narrative alive.
The CDC calls it one of the most important advances of the 20th century. But as Aaron McLaughlin reports, it's the latest front in the culture wars.
Major health organizations, including the CDC, the American Dental Association, and the American Academy of Pediatrics, support fluoride in drinking water. But it's been rejected by dozens of communities throughout the U.S. in recent years, with activists determined to press further.
Regardless of the propaganda, those with the ability to still critically think instinctively know there is a lot more to the story.
First of all, we want to avoid the middle of the grocery store and stick to whole foods, real food. But these days, even the real food is short of its nutrient potential. And this is why it's important to take a vitamin mineral supplement every day. According to studies, regular multivitamin mineral supplement use reduces the risk of cancer and cardiovascular disease. Perhaps supplements aren't important to you, but in today's upside-down world, a daily vitamin mineral supplement is a must, and we have one of the best. Support your health and support the InfoWar. Get your vitamin mineral fusion today at InfoWarsStore.com.
War on Corruption. It's Alex Jones coming to you live from the front lines of the InfoWar.
Welcome. We're now into hour number three. And out of all the wonderful scientists and doctors and researchers and journalists that have been tirelessly exposing the big pharma criminal rollout of COVID and then the poison shots that are obviously far worse, Dr. David Martin is probably the most prolific and informative of them all. There's a lot of people that are close second or third, but he just really is able to educate people with the documents, with the facts. But I wanted to get him back on with the new declaration of an emergency by the UN with Mpox, with the bird flu, emergency authorization of this new mRNA, with all the fear-mongering, cities around the country shutting down already using the excuse of mosquitoes. They're definitely, with 67 days left of the election, trying to bring it back. And I'm not going to go over his whole bio, but he's the founder and chairman of MCAM Inc., the international leader in innovation, finance, trade, and intangible asset finance. And he's worked, been very famous in a lot of stuff with Bloomberg, HBO, been a General Assembly expert at the United Nations and had spoken there to congressional committees, state committees, you name it, in his previous work. Recently, Dr. Martin has turned his attention to providing his research-based facts around mRNA vaccines, the COVID pandemic, and the latest variant push, davidmartin.world. And we'll also put up his X account. And so I'm going to really do my best to give him the floor because the 50-something minutes we have left is just not enough time on the Mpox situation, the unending attack on free speech, and the incompetence of the judiciary. So, Dr. Martin, thank you so much for being here.
Alex, it's always an honor. Thank you for having me, and it's a delight to see you.
I'm going to try to sit back. I'll write down questions and get to them later, but I'm going to try to give you the floor. Where should we start?
Well, listen, I think we have to remind people that the Nuclear Threat Initiative, which was published over 2 years ago, which was funded by Dustin Moskowitz, the co-founder of Facebook and the funder of Open Philanthropy, actually told us that the monkeypox craziness was going to be deployed, and it was going to be deployed roughly around this time. We actually knew it was coming, not unlike the coup d'etat that was COVID with respect to the election running up to 2020. What we know is that the monkeypox alleged pandemic of international concern is absolutely egregiously false. There is no international concern whatsoever. And quite frankly, there's no real credible evidence of any of this other than allegedly some symptoms that are associated primarily with outbreaks of a particular rash and a particular set of conditions associated with a very small subgroup of homosexual men reportedly in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and a few cases allegedly reported in Germany. But here's the problem. The problem is this has nothing to do with monkeypox. You mentioned bird flu. It has nothing to do with bird flu. What this has to do with is the entire campaign to once again suppress the free and fair assembly of people and the free and fair assembly of ideas running up into an election. We saw this happen, by the way, going all the way through 2020. There's an enormous amount of propaganda that was distributed in the early part, in the mid part of 2020. And the specific reason why we had to have a public health emergency was so that public assembly, free communication, free thought could not happen. Please remember that back in 2020, when we were in the early days of what was declared to be the COVID pandemic, we had a number of cases, most notably in the Northeast, Massachusetts being one of the famous ones, where we actually had judges who made the mistake of saying that by keeping people in their houses, by not letting them assemble, by not letting them have access to their churches and their community centers and their other public gatherings, there was no restriction on free speech because, according to the judges, and remember, these are federal judges and state judges who all made the statement that the public still has access to an open and free conversation on social media. And this was directly referenced by a number of judges in the early days of the pandemic. Now, you know, Alex, that there was no intention of having free and fair communication on any of the social media platforms. As a matter of fact, Mark Zuckerberg's most recent written comments were that he probably shouldn't have allowed the COVID suppression to be what it was on Facebook. But here's the problem. The problem is we actually know that to control the narrative, you had to shut down people like me, people like you, and people who at the very beginning were saying that this was actually not a public health emergency. It had nothing to do with public health. It had everything to do with the suspension of civil liberties and the foreclosure on our basic rights in terms of freedom of assembly and freedom of speech. That is exactly what's happening right now. And that's the reason why we now see the judiciary being weaponized against the CEOs of tech companies to send a chilling message that says, if you allow communication to happen on your network, it doesn't matter what the network is, whether you're in France, whether you're in the UK, and obviously there's a huge push here in the United States to do the same thing, criminalize not only the people who are saying things that are against the narrative, but criminalize the platforms on which they're said. This notion that somehow Elon Musk is, you know, terrorist number one in terms of a threat to democracy is laughable, because the fact is that this is the only platform that remains, and by this I mean X, the only platform that remains in the large scale application of its use around the world, where the ideas that actually give rise to communication, which was the bedrock of how democracy was supposed to be formed, can be openly and freely discussed. And I have to say, although I am a huge, as you know, I've been very, very supportive of what Elon has tried to do with X, trying to keep the platform open, trying to keep it as censorship free as possible. There is absolutely no question that even our conversations, Alex, the last one we did, you could watch what happened when it became super popular, because suddenly it became very difficult to find on any of the platforms, including X. So the fact of the matter is, we don't have an open and free dialogue. And the point of monkeypox and the point of the bird flu is to actually try to evergreen the suspension of civil liberties. And what I mean by that is very simple. If you go back and you look at Alex Azar's declarations in the first three quarters of 2020, what he did was he amended the 2005 PREP Act to reach further and further into the notion that anything that actually threatened the promulgation of a public health message was supposedly antithetical to the good order and discipline, which is protected under the First Amendment. As I pointed out in a number of more recent interviews, the First Amendment protections include, ironically, lying. It's how government propaganda gets away with doing what it does. It actually gets to lie because it's a protected form of speech. And what is mysterious is that for some reason, the misinformation, disinformation moniker that is put on people like myself who are trying to do nothing more than report the facts. For example, the Nuclear Threat Initiative, if people have not seen that document from 2022 and have not seen the plans associated with that document, I've said on numerous occasions, the rollout of monkeypox was specifically to cover over the side effects and the autoimmune effects associated with the COVID injections. We knew that there were going to be growing concerns about skin lesions. We knew there were going to be growing concerns about shingles and chickenpox-like effects in adults. We needed to come up with a cover story. This is all documented, not in my research. It's documented in their publications that monkeypox was going to mysteriously show up, and it was going to serve as the cover story to allow people to say that, oh, it's a new pathogen that's causing this problem, and not look at the fact that this is actually anticipated and expected secondary effects of the mRNA injections. So this was not ever a pathogen of concern. It still isn't. There is no pathogen of concern. The concern is that this is the World Health Organization, the IHR, and the criminal cabal that I have mentioned all along, the Wellcome Trust, the Gates Foundation, Open Philanthropy, NIAID, CDC, FDA. This is a criminal conspiracy, a racketeering conspiracy, and the only reason why it is not being prosecuted is because under the PREP Act and under the doctrine of sovereign immunity, crimes can be committed by the public and by public officials, and because they are granted immunities under the PREP Act, because they're granted immunities under sovereign immunity, they can't be prosecuted. But here's the bad news. The bad news is the federal courts have decided to allow every declaration of emergency to suspend the constitutional challenges to any of these acts. And so we're really dealing with two independent crises. One is a judicial crisis, which is actually one where the courts are not even available to consider the criminality of the racketeering and corruption, because they've decided that while there's allegedly a declared emergency, there is no accountability. And that's what's happening on the federal and state court levels. And then on the international level, we are actually evergreening the ability to suspend civil liberties by virtue of saying that there's a public health emergency of international consequence, which in fact doesn't rise to the standard even defined by their own policies. So this is a criminal act. It's a criminal conspiracy. It's once again domestic and international terrorism, as I've said all along, no different from COVID. And what we're doing is we're watching as the world bends the knee again to tyrants.
Let me just add something here, and you please continue. As you're speaking, my mind is just exploding with all the examples of what you're saying is true. We're posting your Substack. We put the videos, the documents where they admit all this. So I have a couple questions here. Klaus Schwab, the UN, they all admit we're using COVID as a drill for climate lockdowns, social credit score,
yep,
working for home. So that basically they're just using it as a martial law training drill. That's A, they admit it. But B, why are they so transparent in a SPARS 2025, 2028 document that it's really a future war game battle plan? Why does the nuclear threat assessment you were talking about 2.5 years ago admit that right around this time they'd roll it out? Because at one level, they talk like they're the adults at the big table, we're kids at the small table. Why do they do that? Is it out of arrogance, or is it to look powerful to their minions? Because look, we talk about this openly, but then lie to them on the news. It's a two-tiered system.
Well, and I think, listen, I've talked about this through the lens of serial killers who like to leave totems and talismans behind to taunt the police. Klaus Schwab is a serial killer. You know, the Gates Foundation is a serial killer. The Wellcome Trust is a serial killer. These are serial killers who actually love to taunt the public by saying, look, we are going to put this information out in front of your face, and we're going to watch as you do nothing to address it. And here's the tragedy. As you know, Alex, I actually broke the story of monkeypox quite some time ago. And tragically, when everybody was talking about COVID, people were looking at me going, oh, there's Dave Martin going off on another conspiracy. Well, it turns out that I actually, in those 2022 and 2023 interviews, I actually laid out exactly what is happening. It's not Dave Martin forecasting. It's Dave Martin providing information and data, which is actually something that we could have and should have taken action with. The tragedy is, to your point, this idea that what we'll do is we'll put the information out and we will emasculate the public by actually laughing in their face, saying, look, we're going to tell you what we're going to do. We're going to tell you we're going to deprive you of liberties, and we're going to watch the impotence of you, your public officials. We're going to watch the impotence of every political campaign to actually allow this thing to be steamrolled. And what it is a public commitment to this acquiescence to an ultimately tyrannical form of social engineering and population control.
Let me just back you up on that, because more and more,
the end goal is killing people.
Sorry. End goal is killing people. Start over there. I just more and more I'm seeing them do this. They've always done it, but now it's getting crazy. where Governor Newsom went on TV last week and said, yeah, we installed her. It's undemocratic. Ha, ha, ha. It's funny. Yeah, we didn't clean up San Francisco for you. We did it for Xi Jinping. Get used to it. He's literally like Patrick Bateman laughing and rubbing it in.
Well, and this is my point. My point is that you have been accused, I've been accused of allegedly being fear-mongering or anything else. But here's the problem. The problem is if you look at the objective reality, what you see is that in each one of these cases, what we have seen is we have seen a willful suppression of all that stands for good liberty, all that stands for good order, all that stands for the principles upon which our country is founded. And by the way, the irony of the French arrest is near comical if you think about, you know, France being allegedly this hotbed of the foment which gave rise to this idea of liberty and egalitarianism and all of the things that were the hallmark of French philosophy during the Enlightenment and during Thomas Jefferson's visits over there. This whole construct that says that we are going to actually undermine the underlying principles under which every single one of our public institutions is predicated. We're not just going to undermine it, but the people who have been charged with protecting it, the people who have taken the oath of office, the people who have sworn to uphold the Constitution and protect it from enemies, foreign and domestic, these individuals are themselves traitors. And we need to call them what they are. I have been advocating since long before COVID. You know, this goes back to 2002. I've been advocating for a cessation of the weaponization of nature against humans. I've been calling for a number of these things. And what happens is that every single time we raise the issues, a handful of public officials will actually take a inconsequential public hearing. They'll do something in Congress. They'll do something at a state level. But the fact of the matter is the judiciary is allowing the erasure of our rights, and they are giving the public no access to due process. We have so many violations of the principles of free and fair elections. We have so many violations of the principles of due process. We have so many violations of the principle of upholding and defending the Constitution that what happens is the public becomes demoralized and sits back and says, oh, there's nothing we can do. And trust me, Alex, there are days, there are many days where I sit there going, am I just barking into the hurricane? But the fact of the matter is, I know, and I've said this many times, and I've said this on your show, I know that at some point there is going to be the AG, there's going to be the prosecutor, there's going to be the federal judge that actually listens to this and actually recognizes that this is their day of patriotism. I keep reminding people, if we want to think of where we are historically, we are right now in the pandemic generation. We are where Washington was at Valley Forge. We are where it looks dark. The enemy appears to be prevailing. They're in the heated houses in Philadelphia while everybody's freezing in Valley Forge. That's where it feels like we are. But this is the time to double down, because if we don't double down, then what we do get is we do get the traitors. We do get the Benedict Arnolds. Those come out of this period where we lose our resolve to continue the fight because we're exhausted, we're tired, we feel like we've been defeated. And the fact of the matter is, like I did with the monkeypox, the reason why I went forward with that story when I did almost 2 years ago was because I wanted to make sure people couldn't say they were surprised by this one. And by the way, you know, I did this on our last conversation. We have 68 pathogens that we are monitoring right now. 68. This is a loaded gun. This is not monkeypox is over, COVID's over, you know, H5N2 is over. We've got 68 of these to come. So listen, this is
time. Well, explain that, doctor. They've got weaponized versions or gain of function versions waiting.
Yes, of 68 other things. And those are toxins, those are pathogens, those are chemicals. Those are all sorts of things. And the fact is, and I put those up on my Twitter feed a while ago, you know, at some point, maybe after this, I'll post them again. But the fact of the matter is, we know that there are more coming. And this is not about a public health emergency. Listen, the best thing anybody listening to this can do right now is actually recognize that when you are told there is an emergency of international concern, Remember that that is now code word for the preservation of tyrannical reach into the suppression of individual liberties. That's all it is. Nobody's dying of monkeypox. Nobody's dying of H5N2. And to the chagrin of all of NIAID, I pointed out that H5N2 was in patents filed in the United States where the supply of H5N2 was coming from NIAID's own commercial laboratory facilities. Literally, you could dial up the lab and get H5N2 delivered to you. So this idea that somehow or another there's a new variant, some new variant's coming down the pike, it's nonsense. These things are published, they are written, they are in patent documents, and we are very, very clear on the fact that not a single one of these things has been a public health risk.
Now, we got to go to break in about 3.5 minutes, but I want to continue to give you the floor. But just, you're a really smart guy. You really know how to quantify things well. And it's not that we are copying each other. We're kind of just seeing the same world, but you're more technical and you're able to elaborate on that, I think, better than I am. How would you, because I think knowing your enemy is important, how would you describe the actual controllers above these minion politicians? So I remember in the last 20 years reading Bloomberg articles, other stuff, Financial Times of London, where they were actually talking to themselves, and they said, we're now going to discredit the nation state, put in idiot leaders, make the public give up, and we'll bring in corporate global government, basically run by BlackRock with the ESGs and the social credit score system. But what is, I mean, we know they want to kill us, depopulate us, but what is the end game? How would you describe the actual controllers and who are they?
Yeah, well, as some people know, I wrote about that in my book, Coup de 12. I actually wrote specifically about the controllers and used that term back in 2011. But the controllers are very interesting, and there's a very particular profile that's fascinating about them. Most of them are actually individuals who have been capable of and ultimately achieved fairly significant financial or geopolitical success. And almost all of them have a deficit in their life, which is that they lost the child in their life that they wished would be their legacy. And this is a very interesting thing. I've tried to share this with people many times. I write about it in the book, which is when you actually exterminate an idea of your heritage, right? You actually don't see a future where you want your children or your grandchildren to survive and thrive. When you extinguish that impulse in people, there becomes a very interesting cognitive shift where suddenly you are indifferent towards life itself. And this is why I find the documents that have been drafted since 2011 so interesting. When you can callously make reference to the fact that we should eliminate anywhere from 10% to 30% of the global population, and that is done in a passing statement like, oh, and there's going to be a thunderstorm this afternoon. It's thrown away, but we don't actually sit with the gravity of what's being said. The gravity is we're talking about the extinguishment of somewhere between 800 million and potentially as much as 2.4 billion people. We're talking about killing that number of people, but we can do it like we're ordering a sandwich at lunch. This only comes from the absence of a humanity where you see yourself as part of a continuum. And that's why it is so critical, in my view, for people to understand that this is not a rational behavior. We try to rationalize it. We try to be good human beings going, well, a good human being clearly wouldn't do that. Well, the fact of the matter is, these are people who are broken human beings who are indifferent to life. They are indifferent to anything other than their own limited period of time on this earth where they think they are going to control the narrative and ultimately leave a legacy because their legacy in terms of their progeny is no longer viable.
That's right. We got to go to break. I totally agree with that. If you look at the EU leadership, almost none of them have children. And when
that's
you have
exactly
children,
right.
Something clicks on, you care about everything now. You're not a collectivist,
exactly,
but you are
right.
A collectivist in your action. And then that creates, well, we'll talk about it when we come back. Stay with us. I'm David Martin.
I'm asking viewers to just sit back for a moment and really think about the success InfoWars has had. And InfoWars isn't just me. It's not just the crew. It's not just our guest. It's all of you, the viewers and listeners, that give us intel, that spread the word, that support the broadcast. In the 30-year history of me being on air and 27 years of InfoWars, we have changed the world. And because we researched the globalists' own documents, we knew their game plan. I didn't learn all this stuff out of some Palantir crystal ball. I did it by reading the books and publications that these creatures put out, because they communicate with each other and are very honest about their diabolical plan for world government, depopulation, transhumanism, total robot control. And I've believed in humanity. I bet on you because I was betting on myself, and I know that it's always darkest right before the dawn. And so now in 2024, so close to this election, it is more critical than ever to not just keep InfoWars on the air, but to not take the reports and the videos and the articles and the interviews and to get those out to everybody you know. I understand that's really stating the obvious, but we have to understand how urgent the moment is and really redouble our efforts. And I'm saying that myself. I'm on the air 7 days a week. I'm doing a lot of interviews. I'm doing more special reports. We're going out in the field. We are busting our ass because the future destiny of humanity is really on the line right now. Now, a critical part of InfoWars continuing on and hopefully even expanding into the future is your support. And we make it so easy. We bring you the very best products that are out there that will empower and enrich your life at very competitive, affordable prices. Go to InfoWarsStore.com. Read the 5-star reviews for the great InfoWars MD line and the other great supplements as well. They really are incredible. They're the very best that the supplement industry has to offer, and they really work. That's why people love them. The fastest growing industry in the United States, other than AI, is supplements year after year for 30 years because people are seeing the incredible effects. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there are more than 15 products under the InfoWars MD line, and they're all amazing. But some of my favorites are the Nitric Boost that cleans out the blood, the cardiovascular system, and has a lot of great side effects that men will particularly notice. You need to check it out for yourself. You hear the callers talking about it all the time without me even prompting them. It is amazing. Then you've got Joint Relief Max that is a natural pain reliever. Works really, really well in a healthy way. You have Turmeric 95. 95% curcuminoid. This is where we get the turmeric for Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula. They're both excellent. InfoWars MD. We've got the full spectrum CBD gummies, 25 milligrams. Great anti-inflammatory. Isn't a downer, isn't a depressant, but makes you very relaxed and focused. It's almost like a stimulant in a weird way, but it's different. And then, of course, we've got other great products for women and men, Ageless Vitality, just high-quality collagen. All of this funds our operation. And, of course, these are 25-milligram gummies. They work great. We have 1,000-milligram tincture that is made by one of the top manufacturers in the country who sells it at retail for twice the price we sell it, then they discount it. Even at the discount, we're selling it for about 50% less than the actual manufacturer does. There's not as much profit, but it's a great deal. 1,000 milligram CBD oil, InfoWars MD, that's the tincture. Then we've got all these other amazing products from InfoWars MD as well. They're excellent, and it funds the operation. So go to InfoWarsStore.com today and check out the InfoWars MD line. While you're at it, get a high-quality water filtration, get storable food, get books, get films, get T-shirts. All of it will enrich your life, inform your mind, and keep us on the air. That's critical right now. I humbly thank you for your support. Now please go to InfoWarsStore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. From the InfoWars.com studios, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
All right, Dr. David Martin was going to the heart of the globalists. They are projecting their own hatred of themselves onto us. And there's a mix of different people. A lot of them are just psychos and love to kill people and hurt people. They love to brag. They love to desecrate Christianity. I mean, there are basic things they just love to do. And it makes them feel powerful. But I want to get into the latest numbers, the facts, the death numbers, all the key intel you've got. But in general, how has their attack gone? Because it has created a great awakening. They kind of want us to forget about that and move on to the next hysteria, the next fear. But I don't think this has gone too well. And when they are at the Clinton Global Foundation or UN events, and they openly, when they're not trying to put out to the general public, they say people hate us. They don't trust us. That was the main name of this year's Davos event. They've taken Schwab off the front billing. He's still the head of it, but he's so hated. So if you see Bill Gates clips, now his wife left him. Warren Buffett's pulled out of the foundation. All these other big groups are doing it. It looks to me like
things didn't go the way they wanted, but they never give up. They're just steamrolling ahead with the plan.
Well, you know, I've encouraged people to go back and look at the Gates Foundation in its formation, because Janet Reno never disclosed what the actual, not surprisingly, undisclosed antitrust settlement was when Bill Gates was found to be a criminal racketeer and monopolist. You know, it's not by any surprise that his reputation laundering exercise was to create this kind of evergreen pool of capital, which was not a fine in any way, shape, or form. Remember, the Gates Foundation became way more popular in terms of global consequence than Microsoft could have ever been. A technology company could never have had the influence that the Gates Foundation had. And by the way, everybody in the Clinton camp knows this. Everybody, you know, around Janet Reno knows this. They know what they did. And to your point, Alex, it's actually somewhat amusing that individuals, patriots like you and me, actually with precious little resources, with very, very little moral support or otherwise, we did actually have some amazing people who actually stood with us. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, the little guy actually came out with the David and Goliath story, and it looks like David actually won. Because remember that during COVID, and if you go back to 2011, to the decade of the vaccine, the publication by the World Health Organization's Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, we were supposed to have a universal acceptance of this kind of pan-influenza vaccine that was supposed to be a childhood mandatory vaccine for every infant at birth. Well, that didn't work out so well. And obviously, as you know, in 2018, Anthony Fauci lamented that nobody was actually taking his boy crying wolf seriously. So he needed to come up with a mythical wolf. And lo and behold, he had something in store. He actually had in 2016, the Wuhan Institute of Virology Virus 1 poised for human emergence, according to Ralph Baer. He had the weapon already in the arsenal. And what he decided to do is deploy it, create what became the coup d'etat of 2020, which is Alex Azar taking over and Anthony Fauci taking over and Deborah Birx taking over the United States government while President Trump stood by and did not know at the time, nor does he still know, that he was actually a victim of a coup in his own administration. But here's the facts. The facts are that they wanted everybody to fall for the terrorist coercion, and it didn't work. A third of people lined up for the shot. A third of people only took it because they were coerced. They had to do it for their job. They had to do it to travel. They had to do it to visit family and loved ones. They had to do it to get into hospitals and clinics, nursing homes, etc. But that third that actually did it in coercion was also a third that knows that they were lied to. They know that it was a lie. They know that even under the declaration in the CARES Act in 2020, and once again, I go back to these are facts, you can go look at them. In the CARES Act, the reason why Alex Azar was able to actually say that this particular injection family, the mRNA injection family, was supposedly going to be something that public health would benefit from was because he said it would mitigate the spread of COVID-19. Alex, look how many times Anthony Fauci has not only gotten COVID-19, but look how many times he's allegedly also now gotten all kinds of other, his own pathogens. The fact of the matter is, Alex Azar lied to the president, had Donald Trump sign documents based on lies. He actually defrauded the United States, and he did it at the behest of individuals who actually had economic gain. And here's the tragedy. The tragedy is some of those individuals are, in fact, the large donors to both political parties. I would love to sit here today and tell you that with all of the developments with Trump and RFK and all of the things that have been happening in the last couple of weeks, that somehow or another David Martin has finally broken down and been enthusiastic about this. But here's the problem. I will not violate the integrity of the facts that Donald Trump had a traitor in his office, Alex Azar. And Alex Azar and Anthony Fauci conspired to overthrow the government and did it. And they did it right under his nose. And at no point has the president been informed of this, because individuals who had economic gain from the very coup that happened are the ones writing checks to his campaign and to the campaigns of the Democrats. So the fact of the matter is, and this goes to your earlier observation, We have an economic interest that is actually not interested in who wins the White House, because winning the White House is merely the theater that continues the distraction that keeps the public from actually ever addressing the real issues. We have to have immediately a constitutional passage of laws that outlaw gain-of-function research, that outlaw the suspension of civil liberties and our basic rights under our protected amendments. We have to have a law that says that no public media institution, whether it's telecommunications, whether it's social media, whether it's the distribution of media, no media can be censored for any reason, because it is, in fact, this public health exemption. And I'm going to be giving a lecture next week in Washington, D.C. The public health exemption has been put in place since the early 1900s. And by the way, it actually goes back to some of the shipping and quarantine acts in the 1800s. But it has been put in place specifically so that there is always one pathway to make sure that Americans don't have their rights. Public health, since the 1800 Quarantine Act, has been the pathway to suspend civil liberties. And I want to be really clear on something. Everybody talks about the 1905 Jacobson case as though it justified this idea that we all had to be injected, which, by the way, never did. Read the case. What it said was, if you don't get injected, you can be fined. And that's what the case actually said. It never said anybody had to be injected at all.
Yeah, but we also have federal court cases. We also have federal court cases saying black people aren't human. So all court cases we can.
Right. But if you go back, there's an interesting other case, which is Juho v. Williamson. It's a California Supreme Court case out of what was allegedly the influenza pandemic in 1900. And this is a really important one. It was so important, Alex, that the FDA, prior to the release of COVID, actually had an internal document where they were teaching people how to avoid violating the California Supreme Court ruling in Juho v. Williamson, which said you cannot make a capricious determination of one population to quarantine and another population that's free to move about. Well, guess what we did in COVID? We let bars open, we let certain things open, but we actually closed down churches, we closed down gyms, we closed down places where people freely meet and assemble, and we did it in violation of Juho v. Williamson, but that was not an afterthought. That was something that the CDC had in a training document to premeditate the suspension of civil liberties. The CDC itself knew, as a government agency, it was violating the law, and it taught their agents how to violate the law. This is how bad it gets. And that's why I keep going back to encouraging people to go to the first year and a half of Kim and my shows on the Butterfly of the Week on David Martin World on YouTube. If you go back and look at those videos, we lay out all of these facts long before COVID became a popular topic. We talk about the CDC's corruption of the law. We talk about the data collection processes that were done. We talk about Palantir and Peter Thiel, and how much Peter Thiel is influencing, obviously, the Trump campaign, J.D. Vance, et cetera. But we talk about Palantir and how instrumental Palantir was in the promulgation of the data collection and surveillance state that we currently live in. We're trying so hard to pretend like there are good guys and bad guys. And let's be really clear. There are only bad guys if their intent is to deprive humanity of liberty.
Now, I've got a few questions here. Great points. Since you mentioned it, I've got a clip of Bill Gates about 5 years ago, and he's saying, yeah, we just take these genetically modified organisms and shoot them right in the veins of children to see what they do. We have the FDA third or fourth board they got while they're voting from a few years ago. I played it on Monday, saying, we don't know what it's going to do in children, so we're just going to shoot it in them and see what happens. We have Netanyahu on with a big podcaster, Jordan Peterson, a year and a half ago, saying, Israel will be the headquarters of this because we're going to just test on the Israelis with their national healthcare system, their national health ID, and we'll find out what works and what doesn't. So there's this hiding it in plain view, rubbing our noses in it. Now the Democrats are, yeah, illegals are going to vote, and yeah, we're going to give them free healthcare and free housing and you know, free education. So they're really just coming out in the open. Here's Bill Gates bragging.
Yep. Is there something to worry about with medicines? That is, might some of them have side effects? Do we need safety testing? I mean, and we're taking things that are, you know, genetically modified organisms and we're injecting them in little kids' arms. We just shoot them right into the vein.
He's literally getting off on it right there.
Yep. Well, and this is what I said before. This is actually the behavior of not just a bad actor. This is the behavior of a serial killer. He doesn't have any problem with the fact that in the name of experimentation and expediency, he's killed numerous children in Indian clinical trials of all kinds of drugs. He doesn't have any problem with the idea of injecting things into children. And by the way, anybody who injected mRNA into a vein would in fact be a serial killer, because that's actually not how you do an IM injection. So even the way he says it, it's actually a constructive admission to a crime. I mean, this guy has zero capability to actually get out of his own way because he has been put into the position of being the implementer in chief of the plan, which actually is not a plan that Bill Gates created. It's a plan that Bill Gates is part of the implementation side of its execution. That's why I try to remind people that we need to have an open conversation going into the next 60 days about who is funding campaigns, and let's have disclosures on how many dollars did they make from Moderna investments? How many dollars did they make from Pfizer investments? These are very simple questions. I asked the question of Vivek Ramaswamy back when he was running for the nomination. I asked the question, does anybody care about his investment in the lipid nanoparticle that was actually used to carry the mRNA into billions of people's arms? Now, I was told that that was unpatriotic and it was inappropriate. But the fact of the matter is, if you go back and look at the Acuitas Arbutus pharmaceutical, you know, University of British Columbia sourced lipid nanoparticle, which was the carrier for all of the mRNA shots, that's how Vivek got his money. And people don't like when I say that. They go, yeah, but he got his money other places and it's not just from that. May be true, but here's the problem. The problem is, if you're using pandemic-derived resources to fund a campaign, is there any reasonable expectation that we're going to have truth and accountability on the part of the candidates being supported by
that
money?
I understand your concern is that the deep state, your concern is the deep state's putting their people around Trump. I don't think there's any doubt that that's happening. I'm not saying he is that, but it should be investigated, and it's all fair game, and I definitely hear what you're saying. So let me bring us to this point. If their project is long-term and it has all these cumulative effects, turbo cancers, the rest of it, and this information continues to come out, you've already laid out a blueprint of how you think we stop them. But for the average person listening, what do they do?
So as I said in a recent conversation, the place you start is yourself. You have to start with making sure that you actually examine yourself. You make sure that you're examining the way you're living. I saw in the break that, you know, you had Peter McCullough on there. I think his recommendations about making sure that you take care of your own health so that you're not susceptible to whatever is done in the environment is actually a great thing. I've encouraged that. I've encouraged people to look into John Hewlett's CardioMiracle for the exact same reason, because I actually think that the more we can do to make ourselves healthy, the better we are when it comes to environmental exposures to all manners of things, not just these biological weapons. But I think what we have to do is, I think we have to see in the next 60 days, we have to see the public double down on making the issues actually something that have to be part of the conversation during the campaign. We are not having conversations about gain of function research, and we must. We are not having conversations about the judiciary suspending access to courts in the name of public health emergencies. We're not having those conversations. And we have to have public statements of our public officials where they are actually committing to either caring about upholding and defending the Constitution or admitting to the fact that they are going to allow public health terrorism to suspend the Constitution. This is a simple conversation. It's a simple topic. But unfortunately, we are not seeing the candidates pressed on it. Nobody is pressing either side on these issues. And the reason is because, as I came back before, the funding sources that enrich themselves on the back of knowing, and by the way, it goes back to the 2015 Peter Daszak quote, investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. The problem that we have is that we have an economic incentive that says no matter who occupies the White House, none of that's going to matter, because at the end of the day, what's going to happen is the corporate interests and the financial interests, who realize that for the public to be cowed into submission, we use public health fear and we use domestic and international terrorism with biological weapons to actually get them to cower.
And let me back you up on that. I remember on C-SPAN in 2018 and 19, there were a series, we played the clips before, of all the different health officials, government agency people, Fauci on C-SPAN saying, we're about to blow up the old system. We're about to bring in all these new therapies, mRNA. We're probably going to use something like bird flu out of China to do it. And they were just openly saying this is going to be the future and investors should get involved. You know, kind of like the former head of Google, Eric Schmidt, was at Stanford just a few weeks ago and openly said, you know, here's the companies to invest in. This is the future. I mean, it's all insider trading. It's out in the open. So let me bring you to Zuckerberg. Why do you think, after all these federal officials lied and said they weren't involved in censoring the election or COVID or any of this, why do you think he put that letter out saying he was pressured? Is it because he doesn't want to lie to Congress? Because he knows whistleblowers are about to come out? I mean, we know Zuckerberg's a pretty soulless character. Why do you think he did that?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it was a very fascinating thing to see. And as you can imagine, when I saw it, I actually had exactly the same thought you had, which is, you know, it's a little too late. The fact of the matter is, you did what you did. You know, it would be meaningful if you reinstated the content that he took down from you, from me, and from people like us. But that's not what he did. He actually pretended to actually have this now act of contrition that maybe he was pressured into something. But I think what we have is a situation where it is in the financial interest of Facebook to now recognize that they have now been seen as a covert propaganda arm rather than a public social media platform. And that's starting to bite them back. If you look at their financials, you see exactly why he did it. He did it because there are an enormous number of people who now realize that Facebook is feeding an AI algorithm, and that's not going over very well. It's actually feeding the propaganda machine of the covert operations that happen in the United States and around the world, and that's not going very well. Remember that the very issues that back in the Arab Spring, and I raised this issue a few weeks ago, the Arab Spring uprising, when everybody was hailing social media as this platform for democratic reform. In fact, the European Union in 2015 actually passed laws that said that no one could actually suppress any information on social media because they said online rights are the same as offline rights. They were the ones that said that. This is absolutely 100% their rules, their laws. And then what do? They threaten Elon Musk when he interviews Donald Trump. They threaten him with deplatforming. They were violating their own rules because when it was overthrowing governments in the Middle East and North Africa, we were all about it. It was a great way to actually foment unrest. It was a great way for getting people to get active. The Arab Spring was nothing but a social media revolution. And giant surprise, the Europeans and the Americans celebrated that. They celebrated the devastation of free and fair elections in Egypt because they wanted to influence the outcome. But the minute the shoe's on the other foot, they violate their own laws. And these are not kind of guidelines and recommendations. These are outright laws. I did a post right after the Elon Musk, Trump interview. I did a post about all of the violations of European Union laws that the European Union's digital manager had in fact committed. And guess what? Within 2 days, the European Union actually disavowed her actions. We're having an effect, Alex. I keep coming back to this. We have to stay focused on the real issues. Spending time feeding AI algorithms about fear, about monkeypox, or about H5N2 or any of those things, feeding that AI beast is serving their objective. Feeding the story about the criminality of the racketeers, the conspirators, and the terrorists who are destroying freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, that's the message we need to actually be promoting. And for the next 60 days, we need everybody listening to the show to actually make sure those messages get out there, because that's what the algorithms will ultimately pick up.
Explain that for people that don't understand, because you're not just one of the smartest people, or the smartest probably, when it comes to explaining all this and dead on. You also, I see your videos all the time, 50 million, 100 million, even them trying to suppress it, you've reached billions of brains out there. I mean, you definitely, people resonate with what you're saying. So explain to them That's what I was told by high-level people in Google and you name it. They said, don't you know, Alex, you were picked early in a war game like 7-8 years ago with AI that they had obviously back then too, to train an avatar that they would fight with and then also try to change that avatar of who you were. It gets really complex. And people don't understand AI is just a mirror of us. So they try to train it in closed AI, but then when they turn it loose in the public, they say we infected. Well, what's happening is the truth's infecting it. So really, we act like AI is all powerful, but we are the masters of the AI if we realize it.
No question. Listen, if we truth bomb every algorithm and truth bomb it with things like biowarfare, bioweapon, don't call it vaccine, don't call it COVID-19, call it a genetically modified biological weapon, call it gain of function research. The terms that we use, and think about when you go into a Google search engine, remember what it does is it suggests the proposed search terms that you probably are interested in. Well, what is that? That's an algorithm that's a frequency-based algorithm that actually triggers your mind to go, oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The more you talk about Dustin Moskowitz and open philanthropy and their criminal conspiracy with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, with World Economic Forum, with the Johns Hopkins University, the more you use the term Dustin Moskowitz and criminal conspiracy, the more you use the term, you know, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation racketeering, the more you actually use that term, the more the algorithm starts picking those things up. I encouraged people back at the very beginning not to use the word vaccine because vaccine was a trigger word that was going to be flagged in the algorithms. But if you use the term bioweapon, if you use the term gain of function, if you use the term biological toxin, these are things which actually will become more visible. So we need the public to actually step away from the language of the incumbency. I have a whole video on David Martin World. Go onto YouTube, have a look at that. But you've got to look at how we get fooled by using the language of the incumbency. We have to step away from that so that we don't actually fall into their trap. And Alex, I cannot recommend enough. Between now and 60 days from now, we need the terms like gain of function. We need the terms like bioweapon. We need the terms like racketeering to be popularized by the people who are actually sharing things on X and on Instagram and on all forms of social media, Rumble, YouTube. I don't care where it is. Make that term popular because that will give us the ability to continue to move forward with all of the things we're doing on the legal front. And, you know, we're working very, very hard every day to make sure that we succeed. We will succeed, but we will succeed better with the great support of people like your listeners.
Doc, thank you so much for the time. DavidMartin.world, DavidMartin.world. They can follow you on X. We'll put that on screen as you leave. Thank you for spending the time with us. And as soon, you always have a lot more information. As soon as you can, with more info, please join us again.
Happy to do so, Alex. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. I'm going to come back a little bit in the next hour. We have a guest host, then Owen Schroer in 1 hour takes over. Follow him at Dr. Martin World on X, at Dr. Martin World. And folks, this has been a live show. It'll be archived at man.video and X. It's up to you now to carry the ball. We can stop these people, but you're the Paul Revere's. Hour number 4, straight ahead. But water filtration, firearms, food, that's all great. But if you don't have communications, I would say communications is just as important as water filtration or self-defense. And you know, your wife works across town or maybe another city, your husband does. In the world we're going into, you got to get these things. They're easy to use, but you got to start using them so you're proficient. Or, you know, your kids are in college or, you know, you've got a teenager in school. Imagine, you know, terrorist hit, they're blowing things up, the grid goes down. You could just be 20 miles away, and it could take you a week. You might have to walk home, folks. And you've got to have rally points. You've got to get ready. And I'm preaching to myself right now because I'm now getting with my family doing this.
And if all your systems were to go down, you should still have a place that's going to be a check-in or check-in board and a meeting location that your family knows exactly how and where they're going to go.
Oh, exactly. I'm admitting I've not done... I've done 1% of what I should, and that's most, and that's more than most of the public. Now is the time with 74 days out, and here's the bottom line. Everything is in stock right now, and that's not usually the case. They have really massively bought to have this, and as soon as the general public starts figuring out about this, and there's already giant demand with governments and private corporations, this stuff is going to go quick. You want to go to InfoWarsPhone.com. You want to check these products out, and you want to get ready. And like you said, the phone's worthless if you don't have the solar panel system, and it's all very affordable, the best deals you're going to get at InfoWarsPhone.com.
Listen, Ukraine, when Ukraine popped off, the phones were backed up for almost 9 months. Why? Because Ukraine, the military, all those guys came in and just picked them all off the shelf. So there was almost a 9-month delay or back order on it. I'm not here to sell it. It's just that when those things go off, what happens? Can't get ammo, ammo goes through the roof, right? You remember those shortages? Toilet paper, right? But as soon as this thing pops off and your communication's down, you're not gonna get a sat phone. At that time, it's game over. It's game over for a secure phone if you're trying to keep people from tracking you.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.